Noel Dobson, Rewind. Where were you born, please?
I was born in the hamlet of Kincaster, which is near to the town of Milnthorpe in South Westmorland, now part of Cumbria.
Which year was this?
In 1931, Christmas Day, 1931.
Where did you grow up and have your education in Westmorland?
Yes, I went to school at Heatherton, which was during the war. I went to school, I went to my secondary school in 1943. During the Cadet Force, which was part of the Border Regiment, and then was called up for national service in July of 1950.
Did the war affect you at all as a schoolboy?
Not really. I got these things like clothes and rationing and food and so on. We had evacuees come to us from Tyneside and from Barrow and Furness and other places that were vulnerable to air attack.
How did the evacuees get on with the locals?
Oh, very well. They integrated completely. Their teachers came with them, and their parents visited them, and they obviously increased the fun factor of the child community.
So there were no tensions?
No, not evident. Certainly not like it.
How did you react to being called up?
It was more or less accepted and taken for granted as one would be called up. It was not long after conscription on a general basis. It had ended, of course, it had ended 6 years after the end of the war, and 8 or 9 years before the end of national service, when I was called up. And you could get deferment to go to university or to qualify in a profession. Most people went and did their military service. 2 years and then some extra service in the TIAT.
Whereabouts did you have your basic training?
I was called up into the Royal Mechanical Engineers and went in the first place to Blandford Farm. I was only there for a few days before I was moved off to Honiton as part of the intake that would be going for an interview at the law office selection boards with a view to selecting a solicitor for commissioning. And so after the first week, the next 4 or 5 weeks were at Honiton in Devon, which would probably be the basic training yet.
And then?
And then I went to a law office selection board and was fortunate enough to be selected to go to Oxford Death School and went to Eaton Hall in Chester. Almost the seat of the Dukes at Westminster, but then a somewhat Palladian building that had been designed by the same man who designed St. Pancras. I come to that place, a medical architect, and he designed it in Hall and we were there for some months. And I was commissioned, in fact, in early 1951 from Eaton Hall. But I was commissioned into the Manchester region.
How did you feel about that?
I hadn't, in fact, asked to join the Manchester Regiment when I was given the chance to serve one's preferred regiment. I asked for the Border Regiment, which being my county regiment. The second choice was the King's Own, which is a Lancaster based. In fact, they were part of the Northwest Division of the Lancaster Division, I'm not sure it was called. As was the Manchester Regiment. And the Manchester Regiment were coming back from Germany to go out to Malaya at this time, and presumably shortly, young subalterns. And so one was drafted into the Manchester Regiment, which is not exactly.
Just going back to your treatment as a conscript, we hear quite a lot of publicity nowadays, or allegations nowadays, about maltreatment of conscripts in the 40s and 50s. Was that your experience?
I think that the allegations that are made now are fair enough. By today's standards, there was bullying, psychopathy, and basic training, and so on. But by the standards of that time, certainly, the usual thing as a child is that you go up to a prank and the policeman caught you, kick your bottom for you. sort of by the standards that I'd grown up to, drama wasn't particularly caressing. It was hard work, but then they had the task of instilling very quick discipline into a lofty collection of young men who were unwilling, conscripts, many of them. So yes, it was quite unacceptable behaviour today, and some of the junior NCOs at the Army Basic Training Unit, or to my mind, quite warped people have got that day. But no, not in our mind. And it was, as I say, in the context of its time, was not particularly hard.
But was the bullying physical or verbal?
It was verbal. Except that, of course, they could make you do physical things like stand up and throw your bedding out into the snow if it is not your recommended bed, or keep you marching up and down for long periods with a rifle in a very uncomfortable position, these sort of things. But they don't actually obstruct you. But to the extent that they could make you do physical things that were extremely uncomfortable, then to that extent it was physical.
But was it malicious or was it needed?
Some of them got used to behave in a sadistic way, and did so.
Coming back to your own commissioning, what happened once you'd got into the Manchesters?
Well, very quickly, we were posted to Malaya, and I embarked for Malaya in, I think, June of 1951. On the Empire Halliday, sailing from Liverpool. It was a very wild night, the night before my embarkation. I was a little officer. A thousand full of people. We painted the town of Chester red.
Was anybody arrested?
No. We had the military police, the regimental police, the civilian police, the US Air Force police who were around there, sort of boxing boots in my case has been extremely brutal. And they were bringing in drugs from all corners of the town. And yes, I was a little officer, I'd have to call in the adjutant and the second command. All the assistants that you could get, and all the cells were full of people getting knocked up and all the places. They didn't care because they were going to sell tomorrow anyway.
Did they cause any destruction or damage to people?
I imagine they knocked Chester about a bit and whatnot because they're pretty high speed going on.
Which battalion of the Manchesters were you in?
The 1st Battalion.
And what was the voyage like?
The voyage out of there was, to a young man who had never been to sea, and that's what he did for me, because whilst we were crowded forward to a small cabin in the bunks, we ate in the first class dining room, wonderful memories, and high-class service from the motors. The ship was run by a civilian line called the Anchor Line for the War Office. Most of the troops with the standards of civilian pre-war liners still prevail. Oh, yes, indeed. And it was a month, of course. It was quite a long time to endure. It took a month to sail from Liverpool to Singapore.
How much did you know about the situation you were going to face whilst you were actually on the voyage?
Well, not a great deal. We were told very small about why, which is a state of emergency being declared in Milan, and that there were what were called bandit attacks, including guerrilla ambushes and attacks on the attackers and general revolution, I suppose we call it, to upset the state. And the British Army was involved in the role of duties in aid of the civil power, because the dealing with the emergency was the job of the Milan police, and the regiment, I suppose, who called on the British Army technically most of the work on the planning were done by the British Army under a High Commissioner who, soon after I got there, was a soldier. The High Commissioner had been Sir Henry Gurney, and he was ambushed coming off for a weekend in the Cameron Highlands and killed. And he was replaced by a very talented soldier called Sir Gerard Templar, the Marshal General Sir Gerard Templar, who took on the task of dealing with himself in tremendous vigour and success.
How much briefing of the men did you have to do on the whaler?
There was a good deal of training on the way out, because we knew a good deal. But it has to remember that many of the officers in the Manchester Regiment had in fact served in Burma during the war, which had ended, as I said, 5 or 6 years before. And so they were conversant with jungle fighting. And for that matter, the guerrillas, the bandits as we call them in Malaya, had been trained by a British force called Force 136, which was a detachment from the British Army in India and Burma, which had been parachuted into Malaya to organise the communists against the Japs, communist insurgents against the Japanese, who were then occupying force in Malaya. So a lot of their tactics were known. We were told about these during training on the ship and such things as getting used to weapons, which is a different rifle, which is a shortened marking into a professional weapon. I had to learn to fire that at all kinds of the ship's side and not to touch the barrel, but it's got very hot, something we are used to now in our service rifles. This sort of training went on at the time we were going out.
Did the troops get unfit on the way?
Oh, I don't think so. They got PT clearly on the ship. Good deal of walking and death games. Good deal of unfit.
With what mood did you approach going into active service yourself? With excitement or apprehension or what?
Both. I'd go direct into active service, of course, when we landed on Singapore, which was relatively trouble-free. That's where the battalion disembarked. And I was sent off to the Far Eastern Training Centre, which was in the state of Johor. I think you remember the 18th milestone, as it is the 18th milestone, north of in the state of Johor, from Johor Bahru, which is where the causeway from Singapore meets the mainland. I seem to come back there, I think it's still a military camp. But that's where the young officers were sent to taught the elements of jungle warfare.
Can you recollect some of the details of that, please?
Yes, I can see the place very well. Permanent establishment there were Gurkhas, one of the things that I can remember is that all the soldiers were subalterns and captains and the like, and they were also unruly units that you could imagine, because they wanted to command, and few of them wanted to obey implicitly what they were told to do. So they didn't make a very good platoon, and the platoon was made up of but we were, of course, taught the techniques of the body instructors there, Australians were there, and British soldiers who'd been out there for some time, and taught about navigation in the jungle, tactics of the enemy, survival in the jungle, that is to say, shelter and food and water and general behavior in the jungle, leading a platoon in the jungle.
Did you feel it was a useful preparation?
Oh, yes, it was invaluable. Because it got out of the jungle's life, it was an extremely difficult place to work in. It was very hot and very humid to begin with, because only 6 or 7 degrees north of the equator, and it rains every day. And visibility in the jungle is typically about 4 or 5 yards, no more. And it can take you. But it could take you a day to do a mile and a half without cutting away through it. So, navigation is very important day of their meditation. And this is taught to them, Sayer at the Forest Training Center.
What was the next step?
The next step was that the regiment sailed from Singapore to Penang in Malaya. And if I remember, I had a tank landing craft, a very excellent tank landing craft. And I imagine they went to Georgetown in Province Wells, you know, which was the part of the mainland opposite Penang Island in North Malaya. The northwesternmost state in there is the state of Killer. But right opposite the island of Penang, well, it may well still be for what I know, a strip of land known as Province Wells, which had an airstrip and was the mainland port at which the government had a tank landing craft and deployed within the state of Killer. And each company went to a different location. So one company went to Arrow Star, another company went to Crow. My company went to Kunlun, headquartered them on Penang Island, and suspended about the Minden Barracks in Penang Island, and so on. So the battalion was dispersed around the island. We were taking over from the King's Own, so there was a handover from them.
Which was your company?
I think it was called S Company, the Gun Support Company in the Infantry Battalion role. The support company was the one that had the rocket platoon, the machine gun platoon, and the assault bayonet and so on. In the normal infantry role, but of course in the land role, all companies were the same. They had three infantry platoons. This S Company just became a company based in the village of Kunlun, and it's not there.
What did this village comprise of?
Oh, I say village, it was quite a substantial town. Basically two main streets, a large market, a police station, which was the centre for the local neighbourhood, the social life of the planters, as the planters club in the town. So.
Was it mainly Malay or Chinese or Tamil or what?
The whole of that part of the north, as far as I know, is a complete admixture of Chinese and Malays. And the Tamils were there, but mostly in the role of being workers on the rail plantation, tappers and local states. But the Chinese were the commercial driving force of the country at that time, and they still are. And the Malays were, the owners, the indigents. I still a proportional mix. I never really knew, but I imagine about half and half.
And did your company have some kind of barracks there?
Yes, we were based in an old planter bungalow on a hill. It had been a camp for the Japanese army when they were in occupation. They were set to mass graves in the ground. But it was just wired off enclave at the top of the hill in the middle of the plantation on the outskirts of the town. And it was a tented camp, although the house itself did have a commissariat with the headquarters and the cookhouse and the cafe and things like that, but the chaps slept in tented accommodation around the house.
And what was your own role with the company?
I was doing commander. Three platoons. I was the most junior platoon commander, the most recently commissioned one, and the only one was National Serviceman. The other three, the other two platoon commanders, Dick Bellamy and King. There must have been four platoons, I guess, because there was another platoon commander called John Adcock. Well, yes, four platoons operating out of this one camp. Basically, doing what the police asked, but a lot of initiative we took on ourselves to do patrols and set ambushes on tracks to try and catch the bandits who pretty accurately had a good infrastructure in intelligence terms and supply terms. They got their food from tappers going into the woods and official contacts me. You have to be very careful on the telephone because they have tapping on the telephone. They got good intelligence, so we don't have names.
What was your platoon? Can you remember? What number?
Yes, there were about.
No, I mean, did the platoon, four platoons, have a number, like 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yes, I imagine. I remember four platoon. I just got to look at that. It was just a platoon. It's between Sergeant and Sergeant Kennedy. It's not only the history of life, and actually, I don't want to see it 2 years ago. We sent Christmas parties with him. And the rest of the names lost in the mists of time, most of them, I fear, of the summary and the other ones here, but Bill Kennedy, I remember vividly, of course. He was one who more or less supported me as a young fellow. He was in the service for the soldier.
Were most of the soldiers conscripts or regulars?
Oh, most of them were conscripts, most of the National Service. And the most of the NCOs were regulars. Some of the old soldiers were regulars, not from the war. But such was the proportion of the National Service, and the regulars were very thin on the ground in terms of proportion of the rest of the National Service.
So how did a regular sergeant react to having a conscript officer with him?
Oh, he was very good. He didn't get used to that, I think. Because when the conscription was the way that people had joined the army in those days, and there were very few, maybe quite senior by 1951, those people who had joined voluntarily before the war. And again, the ones that had joined after the war voluntarily were short service commissions, whereas the Osquare soldiers were sitting on the ground, about 2 million. There were some, but I think that the NCOs took it all the same. They were just young men had to look out for them.
So you were telling me about the degree of initiative that you had in dealing with the situation. Can you tell me more about the operations?
Yes. Probably best to describe our first operation, because it's very dramatic by the event. We were based in Finland. It was decided to you would have a three platoon patrol into a large area of primary forest called the Gunung Bong Su Forest Reserve, which is just in the east of Gunung. One platoon would go on the west side of this reserve, one on the north side, one on the east side, and they would traverse across the corner and then come out there. That's the north, the east, and the south side. And I went in from the west side of my platoon, and I had my platoon with me because I was the least experienced and the youngest of the officers. And he was taking on me. And we made good progress, but we had quite a lot of shooting ahead. Not very far ahead, on the first day. Wireless contact was always very dubious in the jungle because we had ancient wires that were extremely heavy. We had to bring up long wires and trees and try and get through to headquarters, often without success. We didn't on the first day find out what the shooting had been about. But on the second day, we in fact ran into elements of our platoon that going to the north side. In fact, we exchanged fire, our leading scout exchanged fire with their leading scout before we realized that we were little of the shooting. And they had run into a bandit camp that had a very hot engagement in which one of the pilots, Pilot Fitzpatrick, had been shot to death and killed. And we encountered them in the second day, and they were broken up by coming with the pilot Fitzpatrick, along with after the very aging. And we could deal with them. But they were sweeps through the forest that they were doing the following day, hoping. They had hope to surprise Bantam Clemens. They had good sentries. After this period, it was realized that a far better way was to, in fact, ambush the tracks, because the bandits had to move and provide them with patience and sat there for a few days. way as they were coming on it. So instead of sweeping through as a jumping, it evolved to a sit and active type of thing. And eventually, the SAS, then deep range, deep penetration, and actually deep inside the jungle, and this really amplified the fact that they beat it and put that long cry out left.
Did you ever have any contact with the SAS?
No, not directly. Not there. One of our servers went to join them. Actually, arising from that action that I described, our medical enemy, Private Holt, went forward under fire and recovered the body of Fitzpatrick and was awarded an MN for this and was promoted to corporal shortly after he left the company to join the SAS. Family that included among his brothers a VC and their mother declaration. That would be typical, that would be one of the other. I don't see why they had a VC brother. One of these people that I think probably had no imagination whatever about the danger that was inherent in going forward and bringing that thing right back.
So, did any incidents happen to you on this first operation?
No, we marched out as two platoons. Of course, when we linked up with the other platoon, the company commander B, who might be doing assumed control of that platoon, and we marched out and went back to Paris and abandoned that platoon.
How did you find the jungle environment with your first test of it on actual operations?
Well, the one I had been through the jungle myself, but I didn't even know how I'd been prior training sense, so it wasn't entirely new to me. And the guys took to it very well. You move through the jungle in single file because it has to be cut when you cut your way through. Everything's prickly in the jungle, you've got to cut your way through either secondary jungle or through patterned palms or something with prickly air and thread your way through it so you have a leading snout in the pan. He's a fairly great one of this season. It's the first one that's going to be shot at if we run into any activity. The view gets changed regularly because it's still on. Just as I say, very hidden, very dense, very strenuous, very slow, and very nervy. The whole thing is trying to say this on his head.
So you said that after this first attempt at the sweep method, you then resorted to ambush tactics.
No, we did quite a lot of ambushing, but the technique of abandoning the sweeps for ambushes was long after I had left. I should have taken up on a widespread basis, and in fact, again, the only accepted way of doing it. There was nothing to be gained through sweeping 26 men along a longer path, because you're going to be hurt far too far. Half a dozen men sitting there quietly for a week. Surprised to say that they were shooting. So.
And what other operations stick out in your mind that you personally were on?
Well, either the operations were the type I described on patrol,